This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Imagine this. You've been accused of a crime. You cannot afford a lawyer. One is appointed. In a few counties, it might be someone from the public defender's office. In other counties, your lawyer might be someone who was appointed by a judge, which some see as a conflict. The lawyer got the job because of the judge, which puts the lawyer's independence into question. In almost half of Michigan counties, it might be a lawyer who put in the lowest bid for a contract with the county. Critics say for most counties, not enough resources are provided to the public defense lawyer to put together a proper defense. Governor Rick Snyder appointed a commission in 2013 to investigate the problem. Joining us now is a member of the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission, Tom Boyd. He's a judge with the 55th District. Judge, if you don't mind, let's go down the highlighted findings. Let's start with that idea of where do you get a defense attorney in the first place or a public defender? What works and what doesn't work?
The Indigent Defense Commission is authorized by Michigan law, Public Act 93 of 2013, to begin a set of minimum standards that would apply to every system. We have 83 counties running different systems. It's actually worse than that. There are 111 district courts within those 83 counties, 58 circuit courts. Each of them has a different way to do this. There is no consistency across the system. And so what the legislature intends to do, what Governor Rick Snyder intends to do, is to establish a layer of minimum standards that every system needs to rise up to.
Let's look at the deficits right now as highlighted in this report. And
sure.
Let's start with that idea of different courts across the state find public defenders for poor defendants in different ways. So what works and what doesn't work?
Out of 83 counties, six have some form of an office that's providing counsel to defendants who can't afford their own lawyer. All 83 counties have prosecuting attorney's offices. Those are public employees who are working on the prosecution side of the case. Very few have structured organizations that are responding to that challenge on behalf of indigent defendants. The majority of systems are either contract attorneys or assigned counsel systems. What that means is it isn't always the lowest bidder, as you suggest, but sometimes that's what it is. They put out a request for proposal, and lawyers submit proposals, and the one that's most economic for the government, they win. So there's several problems there in that couple sentences I just said. First, if you have a flat fee contract, there's economic disincentives to work very hard. You're going to get paid the same amount no matter what happens next. If you have a per case arrangement, meaning you get paid X amount per case you handle, again, you don't get paid more if the case becomes more complicated. Some systems account for this and allow for extra pay for various motions or hearings that the lawyer may think is appropriate, but many systems don't even account for that.
We don't even know how many counties decide to choose whether you get a public defender of any kind. Loose and varied guidelines is a term. And if you're refused, you don't have any recourse to further pursue assistance. So those seem to be major problems, just getting a lawyer.
In many systems, the budget for lawyers for the defendant are in the court's budget. So when the defense lawyer comes in and says, Judge, I think my client is innocent. I'd like to hire an investigator to talk to some witnesses to determine whether or not that has a valid defense. If the judge says yes, that money in most cases comes from the judge's own budget. Now, judges being human, he or she may be hesitant to spend money from their own budget on a case that they don't know anything about. It's a real problem in terms of how these systems are connected. So when you talk about eligibility determinations in counties that don't intend to spend a lot of money for indigent defense because they haven't got it budgeted, they provide lawyers in very few situations. These types of variances is what the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission was created to address. And we're going to do that by raising the floor as opposed to telling each county what they have to do. There'll be minimum standards that they have to address. The four minimum standards that have been proposed by the commission at this point don't directly address eligibility determinations. My guess is that the next set of standards coming from the commission will. There were just a handful of things that we thought were more pressing and more important at this point than how each individual system makes a determination for eligibility.
One of the things I was surprised to read that only 6% of district courts require attorneys to be present at a bail hearing and an arraignment.
Honestly, I was a little surprised it was that high. In most cases, you have a right, a constitutional right to bail. However, most county jails are 50, 60% full of people who are waiting for trial. So the determination of whether you get out of jail is a very important one, and there's statistics that show that people that are in jail are more likely to be convicted than people who aren't in jail. Having a lawyer available at arraignment changes the case. It has just not been done historically in Michigan. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court is so interested in supporting the work of the commission, supporting the work of the governor, that they provided two different courts, my court in Ingham County and Judge Sarah Smolinski's court in Kent County, with grants to test different ways to provide counsel at arraignment. And each of those grant-funded projects were very successful. We've proved that it is very, very doable, both in terms of human resources and logistics, to provide lawyers at arraignment. So one of the first four standards being proposed by the Indigent Defense Commission is in fact that lawyers be at arraignment and at all critical phases of the criminal proceeding.
I want to ask you about another point that was highlighted, and that is nearly two-thirds of the court systems report the existence of confidential meeting space in both the courthouse and holding facility, though a lot of times the private meeting rooms are often filled already. It's difficult to book them, or they're composed of sort of cubicle-type spaces that don't actually allow for confidential discussions. A private talk with your attorney would seem to be pretty important.
We chose the four initial standards to highlight the most critical needs, and this is one of them. So as you point out, 63% of the courts tell us that they do have this quiet place to meet, but lawyers anecdotally said, well, sure, they've got a place for me to meet, but it really isn't adequate. So what we need to do then, and for instance, by requiring of one of the new four standards, an initial interview take place, we'll be able to look into that interview and see where it's conducted and to see that it's in a private place. Now, all of your listeners who have ever hired a lawyer understand how that relationship works. They go to meet the lawyer, the lawyer gets some information about them, finds out what the problem is, and then works with them in a confidential setting to help determine what to do. Far too often in Michigan's criminal justice system, people who can't afford a private lawyer meet their lawyer in the hallway, often the same day as their hearing, and often they end up pleading guilty to something that day. Now, commentators who look at the system often call that a meet and plead system. It isn't the type of justice that we're really interested in. The justice system works best when you have three people really on their game, and that's the judge, the prosecutor, and the defense lawyer. If one of these three people really didn't come to play, we're not sure that justice is the final result.
On these four key points that you're making, it is going to require some probably more money from many of these counties. What's the next step?
You know, that's an excellent question. And I want to emphasize that the Indigent Defense Commission and Indigent Defense Reform is not about more money for lawyers. Now, as some systems change, they may, incidentally, some lawyers may get paid more money. But it's definitely not what this is about. It's not one of the driving factors. Second, to answer the question directly, is that Indigent Defense Commission Act from 2013 lays out a process for approval of the minimum standards and their implementation. So for these first four minimum standards, which are requiring adequate education and training for the lawyers, the initial interview, providing for investigations and experts, as I mentioned, and the lawyers at first appearance or the arraignment in all critical phases, those four standards were in January, sent by the Indigent Defense Commission to the Michigan Supreme Court. By law, the Supreme Court has 180 days to consider those standards and act on them. The Supreme Court noticed those standards for public comment, which is the official posture today. If you go on the Supreme Court's website, you can see those standards, and they're up for public comment. In late May, the Supreme Court will end the comment period and then consider those minimum standards. If the Supreme Court accepts those standards, which we sincerely hope they do, then each local court and their funding unit, the people who pays the bills like the city or the county, has 180 days to respond with a plan to bring their system into compliance with these four minimum standards. Each plan submitted by a local court, local government, will be attached with a price tag. The Indigent Defense Commission and its staff, through its phenomenal executive director, Jonathan Sachs, will then review these plans and the budgets. All the plans that meet the standards, the budgets are put together and sent over to the legislature. The legislature then looks at the appropriations needed to do the job, appropriates the money. The money comes back through the Indigent Defense Commission to the local courts to bring their systems up to the minimum standards.
So this is something the state will be paying for?
Yes. The Public Act 93 of 2013 is clear that the new money required to bring the standards up to par will be state money.
What about the other concerns that we've touched on or discussed here? What will be done about those? Will the commission continue to do work and make more recommendations, do more experiments? How will you deal with the rest of these shortcomings?
There's two answers to that question. First is yes, the commission will continue to meet. The commission does continue to meet. This year, we've had presentations from experts and staff about what minimum standards should be taken up next. So the second thing is that if a county or a system refuses to comply, the law allows the Indigent Defense Commission to use state dollars and those local dollars they used to spend and go in and take over their system.
How will you know whether these measures work?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that we'll know that these initial standards work when the defendants have more trials and more motions and have their case heard in a true fact-based way. It would be hard to make an argument that the system today provides defendants with the type of effective counsel which is guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution. Again, you know, the system works best when everybody's on their game. And if the defense lawyers are putting up a vigorous defense, the prosecution will respond in kind, and we'll see a different kind of back and forth between the prosecution and the defense. And that's where we're going to find justice in an adversarial system, is in that back and forth.
We've been speaking with Judge Tom Boyd. He is a member of the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission. Thanks very much for the time.
Thank you, Lester. Have a great day.
You too.